Hey, America.
Start listening now.
We really have to work on that sometime, guys.
No.
It's fine. All right.
All right. So how's everyone doing?
Fine.
Good. Très bien.
Ah, I see somebody's practicing just in case France hosts Junior Eurovision next year.
It's Eric? True. I have been practicing French, and that's the only reason. Definitely the only reason.
Yeah. So you've been playing around with Duolingo French for quite a while. So why don't you teach us some important vital phrases that we would know if, for example, if by some stretch of the imagination, we are in Paris next year for Junior Eurovision.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. How about... je voudrais un croissant et un voiture et Derek la musique. And welcome to another bilingual episode of 12 Points from America, a Eurovision podcast from America, the country that's been through the desert on a horse with no name. I'm Eric.
I'm Derek.
I'm Samantha.
I'm Danny.
So, Eric, what exactly did you just say?
Oh, I said from America.
No. I would like a croissant.
Oh, the French thing.
Yeah.
I would like a croissant and a car.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Breakfast of Champions. Got it.
We all, you know.
Et voiture au chocolat.
That's, yeah. I love telling the story of when Danny and I first went to France. It was our first day there. There was a boulangerie right next to our Airbnb. The line was huge, so I had time to practice in my head. I would like a croissant and whatever else. And I was ready by the time I got up there.
Mm-hmm.
I said it and then was immediately asked a question in French I didn't understand and had to turn to Danny and was like, it didn't work.
She immediately changed to English.
Yeah, yeah.
That's when Eric learned that Parisians are well-versed with tourists enough to just look at a person and go, I'd better use English for this one.
And like, I remember turning to you and being like, how do they know? Like, I haven't said anything in their presence. How do they know that I'm not from here and that they shouldn't even try speaking French? Same place a couple days later, you got called out, I'm going to note, where you were ordering some stuff and it was in French and it was going fine. And then you got tripped up on something. And then all of a sudden, like the manager was behind the counter. It suddenly clicks. Oh, he's American. So she changes from French and then says in perfect English, is that all?
I was like, yeah. She said, you know, they don't teach you in French the response. It was like some slang way of being like, ah, is that it?
Yeah.
Say two.
And then Danny immediately is like, yes, that'll be all. And then I got up there and she gave me a look like, don't. Just what do you want? Like, I miss France a lot. anyway, you can tell us about your France experiences on social media. Sam.
Yep, hit us up on social media, either Twitter or Facebook at 12pointsUSA. You can email us directly at 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com. Whatever service you're listening to get your delicious daily requirement of podcasts, if it gives you a way to review and rate, we would love to hear any reviews or any feedback you have for us. It helps us make the show that much better, and hopefully it helps other people find the show too. Also, if you want a way to support the site, you could check out our Redbubble, which, you know, newsflash, we have a new t-shirt and item design, thanks to the brilliant brain of Mr. Eric Nelson over there.
Oh, well, I don't know about that, but
own it.
Yeah, you can tell all your friends that you are a big supporter of our favorite Armenian college.
Oh, yes.
Chainsaw U. You can get the beautiful logo of Chainsaw U emblazoned with on your various shirts. You can get spiral notebooks that say Chainsaw U on them, which I think is great. And it's nice. There's a U like in the crest, and then where there's normally ivy, like on the side, there's chainsaws. I'm very proud of it. It's really dumb. Please, please buy all the Chainsaw U stuff and then wear it to whatever public Eurovision gathering is next. Whenever
the holidays are coming up.
That's right. Yeah. All of your aunts and uncles love Chainsaw U and they want to show it, but they haven't had a way to do so until now. So
buy our merch and go and visit all your relatives. Make sure you don't change your clothes or clean it up at all.
Oh no. What have I done? Anyway, buy our stuff. What else we got? We got news. We have a bunch of news.
Yeah.
Junior Eurovision happened. We're going to get to that in a second, but we have some other news that we're going to get to first.
We have our first official brand spanking new artist for 2021, one that hasn't gotten carried over from the 2020 contest.
Yeah.
It's from Cyprus. And they're sending, it's another really pretty lady.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it's another Sandro. It's another Sandro.
Oh yeah, I forgot about Sandro.
Sandro.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Sandro. I didn't. Oh. It's
okay. Some say he's still running to this day.
Whenever you forget about Sandro, you hear that on the wind.
Sandro.
Sandro.
I've insulted the memory of Sandro. My apologies, Sandro.
All right. So who is this performer now?
Her name is Elena Sagrinou. She is a young artist, well known in Cyprus and Greece, and we actually have a song title from her. It will be called El Diablo. Ah. So let's.
The sneaking suspicion we're sending another Elena with another fuego.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we know nothing about this song. El Diablo. All, but everything about it just says we're doing fuego again.
We're doing fuego again.
Like,
yes, everything. But there's the added twist that one of the songwriters on El Diablo is Laurel Sisters Barker.
No.
Oh.
Keep in mind, Laurel Barker also co-wrote She Got Me.
How the hell were those songs written by the same person?
Oh.
Like, did something go horribly wrong, like, partway through the songwriting season or something like that, and just forgot how to write?
I think Germany showed up and was like, we'll pay you, just give us anything. And he reached into his wastebasket and said, fine, you take this.
She.
Sorry. God.
But yeah.
Heteronormative over here.
Oh, great. Now I'm the ass. But yeah, so we will have to wait a little bit of time before we actually get the song in full. But at the very least, we have our first new artist for 2021 and first song title. So like little by little, your Wikipedia pages are going to get filled up. I know. I'm excited.
I'm excited, too. I've been going back and listening to the previous season stuff, and I'm getting hyped. I'm getting really hyped that we get to do this all over again, except this time
it's going
to
be truly living vicariously through Europe's
success. Yeah, hopefully. I mean, yeah, we don't know exactly how it's going to go, but we do know there are going to be a buttload of songs, and hopefully a smaller sized buttload of them will be good. So
that's on you, crossed. Europe. Yeah. That's on you.
Yep.
And Australia.
I want you to load as many good songs as you can into the biggest butt you can.
Do not take medical advice from our friend Eric, just for the record. Music does not act as an effective suppository.
Unless you lube it up, right?
Oh, man. Oh, man.
Maybe start with a mini disc and work your way up to a CD.
Oh, God. Oh, remember mini discs? Was there ever a Eurovision soundtrack released on mini disc, I wonder?
Wow.
Oh, man, that's
what
a question.
What about DV tape? Did they ever...
Get the Eurovision A track.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I wonder. I mean, there might be one out there.
Oh, that I'm sure.
We should look into this. There are
so many Eurovision memorabilia collectors out there. Somebody has to know if there was a Eurovision 8 track somewhere out there. I mean, yeah.
There's got to be a Eurovision vinyl on eBay right now.
Well, I mean, individual songs would have been on the vinyl. I don't think they did the compilation.
You gave me one.
Oh, that's right.
I was going to say the last one was pretty recent.
Yeah.
It was
Verona, wasn't it?
Verona.
Yeah.
A song I kind of like, if I'm being honest. And not just because I have it on vinyl. Possibly the only copy of Verona on vinyl in the United States. Maybe. I don't know. Did you bring any others back?
I don't think I did.
Yeah,
I didn't get one.
Sick. All right, well,
that's cool.
Hang on a second.
So if somebody puts this on eBay, we know it's you.
Oh crap.
Yeah, all right, don't be
fine. What else we got?
Yeah, move on.
Bit by bit, we are getting a little bit more information on national finals. We are recording this on a Tuesday evening, and we got the first 9 names for this year's Melody Festival and coming out. Very, very exciting. A bunch of familiar names, including Danny Saucedo, who was the second place finalist in Melfest 2011 and 2012. Frankly, a lot of people thought that 2012 was going to be an absolute lock for him in Melody Festival until people heard Euphoria. Yeah, so he's back for revenge. Very excited about that. Other popular name.
I can tell who Derek's rooting for.
Euphoria.
Really?
It's still better. Sorry, pal.
Oh, for real? Oh, now I can't wait.
Let's see. We are also hailing the return of Arvin Garna, who I think I mentioned a couple episodes back were Eurovision representatives for the Swedish delegation back in the early 90s of the song Eloise. And were in the national final a couple years ago with the song I Do that was super, super catchy. Sort of a classic harmonious sound, but really poppy, really danceable, but like danceable for your dad, you know?
All right. Well, Steely Dan is danceable for my dad, but that's not music.
Hey, don't insult Steely Dan.
Knowing our target audience, there are probably some big Steely Dan stans out there.
Steely stans?
Yeah.
Ooh.
I was going to say we should start calling you Steely Danny.
I like it.
You know what a Steely Dan is, right?
Yes.
Oh, we know.
Okay.
Oh, we know.
I'm just going to let that image marinate.
Yeah, we'll put the link on our Twitter. Anyway, moving on.
We have a little bit more information on our postcard theme.
Oh, yeah.
Which is actually really kind of fun and exciting. Like last year, they were planning on having the artists meet in various parts of the Netherlands, meeting with like community groups, like a local orchestra, like or a local choir, marching band, or something like that. But now they are going to be basically putting a tiny little traveling tiny house in spots all over the Netherlands and sort of beaming the artists into the tiny house, being surrounded by the Netherlands.
What I took it as is like, look, all of you are trapped in your residences too. Look at them. They're also trapped in houses. But now they have like a picturesque like backdrop. Like, oh, look at them with a windmill. Look at them in a canal. Maybe they'll get put on that houseboat that like Prince rented for $1,000 a night or something.
Ooh. Yeah. So according to the EBU and the press release that they put out today, this year the artists will be presented to the public through images shot in their own country. So they'll be doing that remotely, keeping everybody safe. We will show these images in the framework of a so-called tiny house. Set up that house in different places in the Netherlands that suit the artists so that we get to know them well. So, yeah. So what if you were to be beamed onto a tiny house and placed somewhere in the Netherlands, what would be representative of you? Like, what would be a good place for people to get to know you well?
Fabo.
I was going to say, probably in, like, the janky alley right next to a Fabo.
Yeah.
Derek? Is
sex shop. No, all right. That's not even remotely accurate.
No, Eric, I know where you'd be. You'd be trapped inside of one of these little neon frame houses in the middle of the red light district of Amsterdam, desperately searching for a suitcase.
God. Apple Maps pulled a fast one on us there.
We're like, hey,
there's a bag store that's open till like 10 o'clock. We could walk there. And so we did. Not only did the place not exist, it was right in the middle of the red light district. It was incredible. Like we hadn't really had any designs on going there, but then we did. It kind of, at least from the direction we went, it kind of snuck up on us. And all of a sudden we were like, oh, well, this is not where we thought we were.
We're here. just plop you down right there.
Mm-hmm.
Beam Eric into that to relive it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's definitely representative of who I am as a person, is being confused outside of a strip club or whatever. Yep, that's me.
I want to go to that pancake house.
Oh, my God. Yes, I was actually thinking about that place. For those of you who are obviously listening and haven't been to Amsterdam, there is maybe about a block or two away from the Anne Frank house, a place just called the Dutch Pancake House. It's a bit of a tourist trap. Like, I feel like everybody kind of goes there, but it's so good.
It's a pancake bakery, I think.
Yes, that's the pancake bakery. Yeah.
Yeah. Danny and I went there after we got done in the red light district. That place was amazing. Amazing.
Yeah.
If and when we get to go back to the Netherlands for whatever reason, that is near the top of the list in terms of like first stops.
Yeah, I've been to the Netherlands maybe four times, including like layovers and things like that. If I have enough time to actually go to Amsterdam and like walk around, which luckily if you fly into Amsterdam and you have a layover, like it's super easy to do, I make it a point to go there. It's walkable from the main train station. It's like the perfect layover after a long overnight red eye flight. Like I had almost like a spiritual moment. It was like my second or third contest. I had a layover, went to the pancake bakery and had this gorgeous like apple and bacon pancake just covered in the Dutch syrup and stroop, drinking a latte. They're playing Laura Pausini on the radio and I swear I was in like nirvana. I had achieved just pure bliss. And now I really, really want an apple bacon pancake covered in stroop. Oh.
When you were there, was the stroop in a giant like vat?
Put on the table? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I took a picture of that vat. I was thinking, like, this is all just
glucose.
Can I put my face in it? Like I don't know what the local stroop. Custom is. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, stroop bobbing. Yes.
That pancake bakery, friend of the show.
Oh God, yes. Sure. Can we get a sponsorship? Like seriously,
I'll reach out.
Send us stroop waffles.
Let's see. Ooh, we have new. Even though the movie's 6 months old, we have new Eurovision movie news.
Oh, is Fire Saga already 6 months? Old.
Yeah,
I
actually
live with that in my life this long. Anyway, they got nominated for a pity Grammy. Whatever.
Yeah, they were nominated for a Grammy for basically best compilation album for media. So like for movies, TV shows, things like that. So
variety shows.
Yeah. So podcast. Unfortunately, that means that we can dream, can't we?
Yeah.
They did not get nominated for an individual song, which was a little bit upsetting to the people like myself who were kind of hoping that
Vucevic would get something.
Yeah.
It was good enough.
I think it might get a, you know, if the Oscars happen, I think that's a contender for an Oscar, actually.
I agree. You know, unless so many people vote and try to nominate Ya Ya Ding Dong that they split the vote and nothing happens.
They can send two songs. It's happened before.
True. But anyway, the Grammys this year, they're going to be nominated against Frozen 2. So I think their chances are about as good as a snowball in a microwave.
I think they're fine. Frozen's dumb.
But it's Oscar bait.
I'm sure.
Anyway.
Anyway, Fire Saga.
Yeah.
It's not going to win. But I hope
it is now officially a big name award nominated piece of media.
I'm making the call. Made a couple calls last week regarding JESC that came true, but not all of them. I have the power of prophecy, and none of you listen to. I'm the Cassandra of 12 points from America.
Well,
why do we even listen to you?
See? He's right. Danny also said that the UK was going to win 2020 Eurovision, and look what happened.
I know.
You know what? They didn't come in last place.
It was a long time before we heard that song.
All right. Speaking of JESC and not listening to Danny, we just had a JESC. I don't know why I put it that way, but it's over. It's done. It's done, you guys.
We survived.
It was a fun show.
It really was.
And I think we need to lead off with some crow eating by none other than yours truly. Derek, play the clip of me describing France's song. It's bland. It just feels really cookie cutter, generic. I don't like it. I don't think it works. And somebody please agree with me. Whoops. well, I was wrong about that one, you guys.
France won with an even 200 points, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Like, they just got it. And the closest, I think, was Kazakhstan with like 153, right?
152. But yes,
152. I told you Kazakhstan had what it took. I told you Eurovision would go for that kind of thing. Now, however, is this like the craziest win margin in JESC like recently?
Oh, goodness.
Or is it prone to this kind of runaway victory?
I'm going to have to look at like the specifics, but
talking. Because like last year, you know, was Poland song that much of a runaway?
It won pretty comfortably, but I don't know if it was like this.
Last year there was about a 50 point margin between Vicky and Kazakhstan, who came in second last year as well with 278 to 227. But there were also, you know, significantly more countries. There were, I believe, 20. The year before that, there was only a 12 point margin between Poland and France, 215 to 203. So the last 2 years have been decently large margins.
Okay.
Yeah.
Of all of the songs to win this much, though, I mean, I liked France's song, but I did not think that it was going to crush it.
I had a feeling it was going to do well. I didn't expect it to sweep the way that it did. This is the first time that the jury winner and the public televote, or the public vote, because it's not tele anything, it's all internet. The first time that they've coincided in quite a few years. I think, I want to say maybe since Destiny. Possibly. I have to double check the numbers on that, but it's been quite a while. I wasn't surprised at France's win. If anything, I was surprised by Poland coming in ninth place.
Yeah.
That was a shock, actually.
Yeah, after the incredible strength of the public vote for Poland the last 2 years, Poland did slightly better in the juries than they did with all of the push that Poland has had and the incredible success that they've had with the public vote. For them to do worse with the public than they did with the juries and come in only ninth place overall, I kind of feel bad for little Ala.
Yeah, she was. I mean, I don't think it was a winner, but it wasn't bad. It wasn't that bad, I don't think.
No. None of these songs were bad. Just, I don't think they were anyway. Granted, you know, you guys are
none of them were real snoozers except for Susan.
Oh, Susan.
So I'm kind of curious about this. Were the votes kind of shockingly different because there weren't countries there who would have normally given them more votes?
Oh.
So were all these missing countries, that's where all the Polish votes went?
So some of the countries that participated previously but not this year included Armenia, Portugal, Wales,
Albania, Australia, Australia, Ireland, Italy, North Macedonia.
Okay. Well,
quite a few.
It's hard to say, especially when France won by the margin that it did. But I can see a decent number of those countries having a decent Polish diaspora, I think, and it would have potentially helped them out a bit.
But the thing is, it doesn't necessarily matter what the diaspora is in a contest where you can vote for your own country.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's true.
And keep in mind that Poland was showing the show on the number one Polish broadcaster. It's not like this is on Nickelodeon. This is on the equivalent of, you know, NBC. And they had a large, massive share. Even I heard a figure that the viewership for the opening ceremony of the show, not even the show itself, but the show a couple of days beforehand, was higher on Polish national television because they broadcast it on their national broadcaster. The viewership for the opening ceremony was higher than entire nations watching the main show itself.
Wow.
It's a big deal.
Woof.
So they didn't even turn out for their own country.
They didn't this year. But who knows? I mean, we don't have a breakdown of where people voted from like we do at senior Eurovision. Mm-hmm. We just have this big old pool of numbers. And the people who were voting for Poland may have just been overwhelmed by the people voting for France and Spain and Kazakhstan. Because they were all three of those were fan favorites, really. And so who knows?
I'm just really weirded out by how poorly Ukraine did.
I'm not surprised. I'm really? Heartbroken, but I'm not surprised.
Okay.
That was not surprising.
Yeah, songs. Yeah. I feel like songs that really embrace the artistry sometimes don't do as well. They're not quite as accessible.
As opposed to like the pop and the production.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can see it coming across as weird a little bit, at least in comparison to what else was around it and everything. I also thought his live vocals had some issues. At some point, he switched to the lower register and kind of stuck with it. And I remember when we did the preview, I said, I wish he would stick to a single register. I have to take that one back as well, I think. Because, Sam, you said something on Twitter to the effect of that it was smart of him to know that he needed to stick to this other register because he was having some issues with the falsetto and whatnot. And that's true. But I don't know that he did himself a lot of favors by doing it either.
Well, I mean, what's the bigger risk? To pull your punches and not go for that consistent falsetto and dazzle that way, or do you go for the falsetto and risk not hitting it and not sounding ideal? So what's the bigger issue, really?
I'd say that's sounding flat would be the bigger issue. If you're playing it too safe, it's just going to get monotonous after a while. And
I'm not saying it was a mistake, just that it was a bit unfortunate.
Yeah.
Again, this is also part of the risk when you are a teenage boy at Junior Eurovision. I hate to put a blanket statement, but, you know, your voices change. They are in flux.
Sam says, no boys.
No
boys
up.
At JESC.
Shut up. You know I'm not saying that.
I am, however.
Let's just double check the scoreboard here. Let's see. Seventh place Ukraine is the first boy.
Well, there were only two in this year's competition.
They couldn't even get to the left side.
It was, granted, it was really close. There's only a 5-point split between sixth and seventh.
Speaking of which, one thing that really shocked me, third place, fourth place, and fifth place are only a couple points different.
Yeah.
Spain, Netherlands, and Belarus. Yeah.
It was a crush almost, there after
it's like
first.
It's a virtual tie, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, somebody sneezed in the wrong way. That could have switched. I also find it really funny that Kazakhstan, Spain, and the Netherlands are repeating their second, third, and fourth place positions from last year. And the song that was in fifth place last year was France.
There's a better song.
Well, I'm glad Bim Bam Twa got justice or something. I don't know.
So we're talking about the music and how we think that performed according to how we were judging the songs, but we are kind of missing a big elephant in the room, which is the fact that this year's Junior was staged in a really very different way than we're used to. That all of these acts, or the majority of these acts, were filmed on site in each nation's home studio. Only, I think, about three or four artists actually performed in Warsaw. So our friend over at ESC Island, my friend Richard, asks, were you happy with the outcome of this year's Junior Eurovision Song Contest, considering it was not staged in the traditional format? How do we think the technical aspects of the show worked out?
You know, I kind of thought that they would do what Major League Baseball did and kind of like add crowd sound. I don't know. I kind of thought that maybe they'd be doing that. it was weird to see performances, especially like the Netherlands, be accompanied with no crowd feedback. It was a very different show. It was just very different.
I was really impressed, honestly. I liked that the stages were all fairly similar. It felt more like a regular Eurovision or a regular junior Eurovision, I guess, than I would have thought. They really put it together well, I thought. The performances were good. Quick shout out to the Netherlands, by the way, who absolutely nailed their performance. I loved it. It was as if Dorados were 12.
Yeah, I love that. We got the Doors. Doors are back.
Their national final performance was a bit more pitchy. I think it was mostly the blonde one.
Oh, I think she's like almost like the lead singer.
This one nailed it. They absolutely nailed it. They sounded amazing, and the performance was great. And Derek, you said as we were watching the show live in our group chat, I think they might have it. Like,
it was perfect. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it was not to be. And in hindsight, in a year that's been so crazy, of course, the one that went na-na-na-na-na-na-na was the winner by a huge margin.
I'm sorry, Eric. How did it go?
It went na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. I'm still bitter.
A little bit.
It was my last place. Last year, my first place pick finished last. And this year, my last place pick finished first.
You put France last?
Yes, I did.
Didn't you remember that?
I didn't. Well, we didn't go over what was.
No.
Yeah.
I didn't mind because I didn't think it would win. I was like, I like it, but it's probably not going to win. Yeah, and then it winds up winning. Like, that's just, that's the instinct that I've learned to develop from Eurovision. If I like it, but really don't see it winning, it's probably going to win.
Yeah. So on the tech side of things, I mean, the staging was still able to be really cool and really well done in pretty much every case. Kazakhstan staging was about what we thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Tear jerky. Mm-hmm. I mean, France's staging was at least a Frank nightmare in the best possible way.
It was like the music video. Like they had the professional dancers out in spades.
Mm-hmm.
But we knew it was going to be the bright and sunny and neon and happy and crazy. We knew it was going to be a confession.
We really did, yeah.
I mean, I look at the way the French act was staged and it being bright and bouncy and bubbly, and I was surprised to see how Spain, another one of the front runners, and basically the only other really, really upbeat song in this year's competition, I feel like it was staged really dark. And I was kind of surprised by that. It was not super well lit and didn't harness the same kind of energy. I also feel that Valentina's vocals were really freaking stellar, like so much so that the naysayers among the crowd, people were saying that she was lip syncing.
I honestly had that thought. She sounded exactly like the track.
I saw a video on Twitter of somebody taking the live track and the studio track.
Like the sound wave? Like,
yeah, and basically putting them over, they're not the same.
Okay.
They are not the same.
Different.
They're close. They're close.
There were a few songs where I wondered if there were...
If that was what was happening.
Yeah, or there were a few instances. Who was it that like was in a white dress and then they cut away and she was in a red dress?
That was Poland.
Poland.
Okay, like that had to be like a couple different performances spliced together, right?
I don't think so. I watched it a couple of times. They panned away from her and onto a pair of dancers.
Right.
For just long enough that if she had a breakaway dress over her, was she started in white and ended in red, is that right? Or the other way around?
Like the Polish flag.
Yeah, exactly.
Ah.
If she had a breakaway dress on top of the one underneath, it could have been done. I have seen super quick changes at Eurovision before. It's tough, but it's doable.
Do we know what the rules were? Like, could they have spliced a couple of different things together or done a million takes or anything like that to try and get the perfect thing?
I think they only had three takes and they had to pick the single best take of those three.
Interesting.
I am not positive if there is anything specifically in the rules saying you can't edit, but I think you had to take the best individual take. I'm happy to stand corrected if anybody from the EB wants to chime in and say, hey,
please come on the show. Edit.
Dave, I know you listen. Give me a call.
Yeah. Let us know.
I mean, I imagine this is going to be a huge question at the senior contest.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If they, because like we said a couple, I think last week or the week before, the EBU has decided that all of the artists at Big Eurovision will have to have a backup performance from a home studio in their back pocket just in case an artist can't perform on stage in Rotterdam next year.
Oh, okay.
And I think that what we've seen at Junior is going to both put a lot of worries to bed that this can be done, but also raise a lot of questions of what's within the scope of the rules.
Mm-hmm. I've wondered about that a lot. I say it was technologically impressive and it felt very seamless, and I'm sure that was helped a lot by the fact that these performances weren't being done live, you know? Mm. So it was just a matter of splicing pre-recorded bits together, essentially, which is not meant to take away from the achievement or anything like that, because it really was a well-done show and it was very enjoyable and so on. But yeah, if the intention is for there to be live performances at Big Eurovision, which it absolutely should be, that's trickier. That's a lot trickier. We've seen how many voting sequences.
Oh, God.
I do have to say I wasn't honestly that impressed with the feel of it. Once again, like I said, that like I was expecting them to pump in some crowd noise, but for the most part it seemed like they were on a reality show is what it felt like to me. It kind of really did feel like they were in a studio rather than on a stage,
like an American Idol sort of thing.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah,
which they were kind of. They were.
I know. Yeah,
they were. You know, this is not going to feel like your normal Junior Eurovision. Mm-hmm. You know, but I would rather have the contest go on safely, especially where kids are involved.
Yeah.
I would rather it go on safely than it having the full Eurovision experience. We actually saw that very much in focus after the contest. We noticed during the voting sequence that Sandra from Georgia, despite singing a song called You Are Not Alone, was sitting alone in the green room. And we're like, oh, what's up with that? She was originally supposed to be surrounded by her dancers. And we found out later that she was in quarantine, that she had to be in isolation, that she had been potentially exposed to COVID.
I see.
So she had to be alone at that moment, which is so heartbreaking. But
I should have surrounded her with balloons, balloon animals.
Yeah, or stuffies or something.
Something weird.
Yeah, it was surprisingly
Duncan Lawrence.
Yeah. Oh, and speaking of,
like Carrie Fisher in Rogue One, it's just him.
Speaking of, can we talk about the Hollow Dunk for a second? Because
the Hollow Dunk,
like, I don't think I was the only one. Maybe I was among us. I didn't even realize it was a hologram during the performance. Somebody pointed out afterwards, he's not actually there. It's a hologram. And I couldn't believe it.
It did look pretty good. Like, I could tell that there was some, he wasn't quite in the same focus as the other two, but it was pretty close.
Mm-hmm. I just thought it was very awkward. I didn't realize it was because he wasn't actually there.
I didn't think it was a hologram. I just thought he was weird.
I just want to interject and say, I thought it was a little inappropriate that they had the two senior performances. I'm like, this is the kids' contest, and you're hijacking it, you know, because you're sad the other contest got canceled.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm not against having a bit of crossover between the big contest and the little one. We have junior singers coming up to senior all the time.
Just to say hi, and that's it.
They used to have an almost full performance.
They should.
They should. Absolutely
should. I agree. I feel like Destiny was robbed when they didn't let her have a chance to belt out Not My Soul the following year. But
Derek, would you feel the same way if the winner of the Polish national final had been Lucy instead of Empires? I'm just saying, it could have been Lucy.
I feel like Lucy would have been a bit more kid-friendly. Empires didn't fit with the rest of the show. I just didn't know what it was doing there. It was well-staged and all that, but I'm just like, okay, you guys need to let this go. It's over.
Part of me was half expecting a surprise announcement that they were just going to tell Alicia Szymplinska that, yeah, by the way, surprise, you're going to Eurovision next year.
You're going to Junior. Right now.
I was half expecting them to surprise her with that, but that didn't pan out.
Steal even more attention from the Junior show.
Yeah, keep people talking.
Hmm. Derek, you haven't said much about the show. I think that means you hated it.
Yep. Okay. Burn it down.
That tracks.
I mean, I thought technically it was very good. Watching it, I didn't think too much of all the concessions they had to make and all the changes. I thought all the performances were very well done. I thought some of the staging was really impressive. In such a small space, I thought they used the, was that holographic background or whatever it is?
The Zoom background.
It looked really cool. I'm surprised Russia did as badly as it did. I mean, they spent a lot of money on that. That was well produced and just kind of forgotten.
I think the problem with this year was that the good songs won.
And that don't is a problem that... how?
Yeah,
what? I don't know. Maybe it was the fact that there was no the performative aspect of Eurovision was really tamped down. And so the songs themselves really shined more.
Hmm.
Hmm.
I know Eric won't agree with me as far as France is concerned, but...
It's fine, okay?
All right, so let me toss another monkey wrench into the gears here.
Yes.
As we know, Armenia was originally intended to participate this year.
Why?
Exactly. They... Well done. Well done, Danny.
Thank you.
Yeah. So yeah, the song Why by Milena Fox would have been their entry. They released it about a day or so before the show itself. And I know that I listened to it. I think I shared it with our little group chat. For those of us who listened to the song, what were your thoughts on it? And how do we think it would have done in this mix?
I quite liked it, but I think it at best would have come like seventh.
That's kind of where my head is, too. I kind of put it in a similar box as the Ukrainian song. Like, a solid song would have done great at senior. Obviously, a very talented performer. Maybe a bit too low-key and serious for junior, but still really good.
I got to agree on all points. It's a great tune, and yeah, it would have had the same problem Ukraine did, I think. It just wouldn't have fit exactly. We always talk about Sam hates the phrase too good for Eurovision. That's not what I'm saying here, but it's like, it's great, and it's a weird fit. It's not that it's too good, it's not that it's too bad, it's just a weird fit for the contest.
But then again, if you had put her next to Roxanne and Victoria,
oh yeah, yeah,
that this, it would have been seamless.
It's very much in that class, for sure. I wonder if we'll see her at senior in a few years.
I have to wonder if low key is the right term for like that song. More subtle. It's a bit subtle for Eurovision.
And junior in particular.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
My one other question, who wants to go to France next year?
Moi. S'il vous plaît.
Yeah.
Le grand oui mange le pamplemousse.
You think they'd have it in Paris?
I would imagine. I mean, France hasn't won a Eurovision sanctioned event since the 80s when they tied at Eurovision Young Dancers.
Good
this is
gravy.
A big deal.
Yeah.
And I would be kind of surprised if they didn't have it in Paris.
It's the only city they have that has an Eiffel Tower, so...
They'll build another one. Wasn't that expensive.
Just a bunch of steel, whatever.
I think I'm just excited by the potential. I mean, if both competitions go on as expected, if people are able to attend, I am thrilled by the possibility that there may be two Eurovision-based events next year that Minneapolitans can access via direct flight.
Uh-huh.
How amazing would that be? Not to say that I don't love my layovers in Iceland, if necessary.
Don't you forget about Dublin.
I don't forget. I will never forget about Dublin.
Don't you forget
about Dublin. Dublin, Dublin.
There was definitely a moment after France won. My first thought was just like, what? Why? And then my second thought was, wait a minute. You might be able to travel by then.
Yeah.
And I can go back November. I can go back to France, which would be amazing. And it was I had a little bit of that excitement I had when Duncan won, the non-Hollow Dunk won in 2019, saying, sweet, Netherlands is doable. I'll get to go. And I mean, we know how that worked out. But yeah, it seemed like, okay, you know, I'm holding out hope that we might be able to get to Rotterdam depending on what happens over the next few months with vaccines and other things. A change of leadership in the U.S. is not going to hurt, I imagine. But realistically, I don't know. November, mid to late November in Paris.
Could happen.
Feels doable. So
it absolutely happen.
We'll see what happens. I'm going to go to one of these at some point, I swear to God. We'll see.
12 points from America field trip.
That's right. Corporate retreat.
Love it. Ooh, tax write-off.
It's what I did when I went to France last year. And the Louvre shut off the access to the Vermeers when I was there. And hopefully I can see them this time. That's my other concern. Yeah. Marvelous.
Marvelous. So I guess we close the book on Junior Eurovision for another year then.
Bye, kids.
Indeed. Indeed we do. So long, children. We no longer care about you.
Yeah, aww. I know. Yeah, shut up the children. Put them in their isolation boxes. Until next year, till they are needed again.
To the pod.
All right. Well, we have been asking our followers on Facebook and Twitter. Again, that's 12 points USA to reach out to us on social media. We have been asking for them to send us their burning questions, whether they want to know about just us personally or a bit of Eurovision history or just randomness. You ask, we answer. And this is a going request, like an ongoing request. So if you have something that you'd like to query upon us, I don't know if that's proper grammatical, whatever, but
it is not.
Whatever it is now, ask away. We will reach into the mail sack and pull out the mail. But yeah, we've got
our sack, listeners.
Ho, 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 everybody.
Anyway, let's answer some questions here. We've got one from Ariana483 on Twitter.
Oh, hey, Ariana.
What's up, Ariana? And Ariana asks, what's the earliest scandal in ESC that you know of, or event considered to be a scandal at the time that perhaps we wouldn't think of as scandalous today? I don't really have an answer for this. I was thinking about when Kirk and Uhura kissed, but that was Star Trek, not Eurovision. So that's my bad.
I was thinking of when Celine Dion dropped that bag of cocaine on stage.
Shh, we don't talk about that. That was Renee's.
Oh, that's right.
I think I may have an answer for this, but, you know, of course, I'm old, but I wasn't, you know, alive for the early Eurovisions or anything like that. My brain went to Eurovision 1957, so really only the second contest ever. And the Danish song, Skibet Shall Sally Not, the ship is leaving tonight.
It used a saxophone.
How very dare they? I know. That libertine instrument. So it was a duet between Bertha Wilke and Gustav Winkler. And the song is all about two lovers saying goodbye to each other as the ship is leaving tonight. And who knows when they'll be able to see each other again. And at the very end of the song, they kiss. And the thing was that there was supposed to be a cue from a stagehand at some point to sort of end the kiss. And the cue never came. So they're just making out on stage.
That's illegal.
Like, the only thing that could have been worse is if she had shown an ankle. So I believe it holds the record for longest Eurovision kiss. I don't know if the ones from Finland in 2013 or the Lithuanian mass makeout session in 2015 beat that record, but at the very least, by 1957 standards, it's like X-rated. So Denmark 57, that's kind of where my brain went.
How long? How long are we talking? It's like 20 seconds.
I haven't taken a stopwatch to it or anything like that, but it was
objectively, it's too long.
It probably about a good 10 second smooch.
Okay. Oh, that's still very long.
Yeah, because I mean, I don't know whether they forgot to signal or if like the stagehand was into it and just like really distracted.
That'd be amazing. The stagehand was like, oh damn,
they're really going at it.
Oh crap. Yeah,
it was the same guy who screwed up the Emma Stone envelope at the Oscars.
Same guy.
So was he just standing off stage going, more?
Yeah.
Oh, Denmark. Yeah. You libertines. You.
Yeah, no. And that wouldn't move the needle at all in 2020. Not at all. No.
We wouldn't even think of that as scandalous today. We'd just be like, oh, man, look at that goof. Look at these two goofs.
Yeah.
What else even is there?
I mean, I think in terms of a rule standpoint, there is a bit of a kerfuffle around the voting around the 1963 contest. It was a very, very close race. The songs that came in first and second were only separated by 2 points. And granted, it's a different voting system. But basically, at some point, Norway had attempted to register their votes. They had some sort of a technical difficulty, and then they had to call back. And the second time that Norway delivered their votes, it was a different set of numbers than when they first tried to deliver their votes.
Oh, it was like if Belarus had actually done things right.
Yeah, basically. So if things had gone one way, it would have been a Swiss win, and Esther Ofarim's Tvan Pa would have won. But the way the rules stuck, it was Denmark, those crazy Danes. Greta and Jorgen Ingman's Dansevis ended up taking the win. Which, granted, I'm thrilled about because that's one of my favorite Eurovision entries of all time. So some people were saying that, oh, maybe Norway was just trying to give another Nordic nation a win. I don't know. I don't really know. You know, 1963, the contest still exists. You can watch it for yourself if you can get your hands on a copy of it. I think parts of it are on YouTube, not necessarily in the high def that we're seeing from Eurovision again. But yeah, watch it for yourself and let us know if you think that Switzerland should have won in 63 or if it was Denmark. Derek, to close out that little question, can we just play a little segment of Dansevis? Please.
Drag him over the coals.
Derek.
Fine.
Let's take a look at another question. We've got one from Katie. Katie Proctor on Facebook asked, oh, I love this question. Which artist would you be most likely to cosplay as?
All right.
Individually or as a group?
I took the lead on the last question. Somebody else hop in there and answer a favorite. I can come in at the end.
Well, I'm going to dress as the Quick Change Behind the Doors crew for Dora Dose.
Ooh.
That's
would
me.
You, would Which you color be in red? Suit? Yeah, red, blue, or yellow.
Okay, so I would be the guy who was the blue double, but also wore the high heels for like those 2 seconds.
Oh, is he the one that got to walk up the wall?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Oh, nice.
The guy with the gams.
So I think in the early days of this podcast, I'd thrown out a group costume suggestion at one point that we ended up not doing, but Kano had done a post on Instagram, and I wish I could remember the full context of this, but they were in some group of colorful costumes. It might have just been for Pride or something like that, but they had colored wigs and matching outfits, not to each other, but to the wigs they were wearing. It was a very colorful and fun. And I remember thinking, all right, we should go as costumed Kano as a group for Halloween, something like that. So I guess that's my answer. That would be cool.
Nice.
If I were dressing up solo, oh gosh, I'd say like Carl Espen, because then I don't have to do anything. Easy. Just done. There. Hi, I'm Carl Espen. I made a Norwegian flag out of wood. Yep.
That's a great impression.
Yeah, thank you.
Derek, what about you?
I want Chinga's outfit.
Ooh.
The laser space.
Does that come with the laser apparatus that draws hearts on you?
Damn well better.
I think I called it the Iron Man apparatus when I was first watching it.
I also like the Christian Kostoff's costume, which was designed by one of the costumers from the second Star Trek movie.
He looks so good.
Are you serious?
Yep.
So the same guy did Wrath of Khan and Beautiful Mess? Oh.
Kostoff! I will always watch Eurovision and like fantasize about, man, if I had the body of X, Y, or Z person, like I wish I could rock that costume. Like Annie Lorak, Ukraine, Shady Lady. Like if I had the confidence in the gams, I would rock that silver dress like nobody's business. But I don't, so I can't. So my brain is going to a pair of group costumes. If I was in just a group of fabulous ladies, possibly slightly inebriated, but still out to have a good time, there's a song from Portugal back in 82 called Bang Bong by a group called Doce. And there are these four ladies dressed up in like black and white harlequin musketeer glamorousness in all of the glory that 1982 Eurovision can provide.
Uh-huh.
And it is pure joy and sequins and feathers and over the top and wonderful. If I was in a co-ed group, my brain is going to Turkey 1987.
Which is?
This song is called Şarkım Sevgi Üstüne, which literally just means my song is about love. And if you hop on YouTube right now and watch this, you will be almost blinded by a flurry of fringe and, and aquanets. That's incredible. And the performance is both made and broken by those outfits because they ended up with nil point at the end of the day, but it's such a freaking legendary performance. So like Seyal Taner and Group Lokomotive, Şarkım Sevgi Üstüne, especially the one, there wasn't the lead singer, but the one right next to her had the sort of Bride of Frankenstein hair, like this shock of black hair with this like line of gray or white. Just do yourself a favor. If you don't know the song that I'm talking about, just Google Eurovision 87 in Turkey and just have a good time. You're welcome. All right, next question up from Dan, or the Dan Garrett on Twitter.
The Dan Garrett,
not just a Dan Garrett, the Dan Garrett. Which countries would you rather see doing a national final instead of internal selections, and or vice versa?
Oh wow, I don't know.
I've got one that immediately comes to mind.
Go for it.
Which is that I'd like to see a Russian national.
They used to have some incredible ones.
Because I didn't know that they'd ever done it, to be fair. But I just feel like it would be insane. Can you imagine? Just think of some of the last few acts that they've had. Polina going up against Sergei, going up against Little Big, going up against Girl Stuck in a Mountain. Maybe not.
Oh, they
so
had
much.
Another Girl Stuck in a Mountain at Junior Eurovision, except it
Kazakhstan,
was a dress. It was a dress mountain. Yeah,
that's the first one that immediately made me think, like, this would actually make me somewhat invested in what Russia's up to.
What are they up to?
It would make it more interesting, you know. Yeah, I'd like to see that. I would also like to see the UK do a national final, but with artists who are good.
Yes.
That might be too much to ask. I don't
know. I was gonna say, that was the only one that really came to mind. A lot of the countries that don't do national finals seem to vacillate between selection and final, except for the UK, and the UK always seems to send a dud.
So. But that's the case whether they're sending national final or internal, though.
That's true.
Yeah.
I think every country should just do national finals.
I mean, some countries just don't have the budget for it, let's be real.
Yeah, but you look at like Albania or Italy, where it's its own event, or Melody Festival, and it becomes its own thing that could get you to Eurovision if you wanted to. And kind of cultivating a culture of music in your country, I think, would be really helpful for something like this. I don't know. But I'd rather have more songs and kind of see what could potentially happen rather than just say, okay, it's this one with this song, and we'll tell you what the song is later.
I miss the days of Greek national finals, which were generally lower key and lower numbers, and oftentimes because of budgetary restrictions put in places like, you know, shopping mall food courts and having their music videos filmed in parking lots, things like that. But they were so much fun, and they had some great, great tracks in there. So I would love to see Greece one day return to a national final. I have to second the idea of the Russian national finals. Those were great, and there were some really, really great things that came from that. Like, we would not have known about the Buranovsky Babushki if they hadn't done a national final.
This is true. Yeah.
Yeah. Or like, I think in the larger scheme, it would have been hard for us to know about them. As for a nation that has a national final that I wish they would just go internal, that's really tough. Because I love Festival I Kungës. Like, I absolutely love the Albanian national final, or the festival that they, like Derek was saying, goes to a national selection. But I feel like the music of Albanian pop and what we hear on, like, what's popular there is a little bit different from what we see at Festival I Kungës, and I feel like the music of the Albanian diaspora is so great and so incredible. You have artists like Bibi Rexha and Dua Lipa, and, you know, so many of these great artists that are coming up that just happen to have Albanian Kosovar roots, that they don't do Festival I Kungës. They don't have to. I would love someday for Albania to pool their resources and say, Dua, you want to sing for us, and God, see what happens. Rule. Yeah.
So Sam, what you're saying is that Dua Lipa and Bibi Rexha, and there's another one too, isn't there?
There are a bunch.
Yeah.
Rita Ora.
Yeah. That's the one I was thinking of. Also Albanian. What you're saying is they should be forced to do Fickness.
Well, we tried. The UK actually tried to send Rita Ora a couple of years ago, and she bowed out of the national final. It was before Rita Ora was Rita Ora, but yeah.
Oh, I see. I was gonna be like, she would have killed it.
That would have been 2009 in Moscow. Yeah, yeah. So we got one final question from our mailbag, at least for this week. We have plenty more, and again, if you have any more to send to us. Really deep question. Hey, Danny, what's your favorite kind of soup?
Are we being purists here? Because I saw a chart on the internet recently that claimed Saturn is technically a soup. Yeah.
Yeah, and that clogged gutters are technically tea. Yeah, I saw that too.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
It's my favorite soup.
Don't say Saturn.
No, my favorite soup is probably, this. People are going to call me a gross old man for this. Clam chowder.
You're a gross old man.
I really like clam chowder.
Whoa. New England or Manhattan?
New England. Okay. Manhattan is for idiots. Manhattan is for bedridden old grandpas.
For a second, I was about to say, like, if he says split pea, I'm going to lose it. Clam chowders.
Eric, what's yours?
Oh, gosh. Well, my girlfriend makes a mean, like, bacon beer cheese soup.
Oh, that's an upper Midwestern answer right there.
And we're an upper Midwestern people. Yes. I can words. It's really good. Often, like, bake a little loaf of beer bread to go with it, and it's great.
Shout out to your girlfriend, friend of the show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, really good friend of the show. She's great. And so is the soup, in some order.
Derek?
Creamy tomato basil.
Ooh.
With, like, a grilled cheese Sammy.
Yeah, absolutely.
I see.
I didn't even think about that. I don't know why.
Because you were blinded by the allure of beer cheese.
Well, yeah, there's some recency bias there. But I don't know that I've had a ton of soup in the last, like, decade. It just hasn't come up a whole lot. Like, I like that.
The 2010s have not been the decade of soup. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I think I have soup every day.
But now, soup. Soup is back, baby. Soup.
Soup.
Soup. Sam?
I am going to be a complete and utter stereotype of my roots as being a Jersey Jew and saying a damn good bowl of matzo ball.
Okay.
Yeah, like whenever I feel a cold coming on, a sniffle, or if I just am having a rough day, a good bowl of matzo ball soup. Bonus if it has noodles and matzo ball, because then I'm just spoiling myself. Lot of dill, and I'm a happy girl.
It's like a good loaded ramen, a soup.
Yeah, it's soup.
If it's a broth-based ramen, yeah, sure.
Yeah, okay.
We call pho soup. Like, ramen soup.
Yeah, that was, because that definitely comes to mind too. Also, I kind of have a soft spot for, you know, I think it's, I know growing up, the brand we had, it was Mrs. Grass, but it's just that brothy soup that has a billion little noodles in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know the one I'm talking about?
Oh, yes.
Mrs. Grass's billion noodle soup?
Yeah, good. It's nice. It's literally just noodles, but
it's just noodles.
I really like carbs is the thing. So yeah, but no, bacon, beer, cheese soup, still number one. My number one.
She was writing about soup.
My favorite soup is bacon, beer, cheese, soup.
Yep. Da-da-da. Helena Paparizou was singing about soup the entire damn time. Surprise. Yes, you want your insider knowledge? There it is, people.
Why do you think she won? It was a message that resonated with all of Europe. Soup.
Well, folks, if you have other questions for us, or if you just want to extol the virtues of your favorite kind of soup, hit us up again at 12pointsUSA on either Facebook or Twitter, or email us directly at 12pointsUSA@gmail.com. We will definitely be getting to your messages. Thank you for sending these, by the way. This Katie, Dan, Michael Lott, I believe it is, on Twitter, and Ariana, thank you for the questions today. Richard from Eurovision Ireland, we got your question earlier today. Thank you for that. Again, hit us up on Redbubble if you're looking for new shirts and swag. Give us a rating, a review.
Yeah, the reviews and the ratings, they really help with visibility and with like rankings among like music discussion podcasts and things like that. So like in all seriousness, if you want to throw down a rating, it really does help us. It helps us reach an even wider audience and so on. So
I mean,
so
we can only scrape by on the fact that our podcast begins with a number and not a letter for so long. we can't just depend on that all the time. So
it doesn't hurt. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, y'all. And as we've established, there is no question we won't answer. So just ask whatever you want. We'll do it.
We're shameless.
That's right.
And we have too much free time on our hands. These are the things that we do for you, dear listeners.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Should we call it a night, my friends here?
Yeah, I suppose so.
All right. It's getting late. In that case, we will talk to you folks on our next episode. Thanks for tuning in with us. Appreciate it as always. Until then, I've been Samantha.
I've been Shameless.
I've been Derek.
I've been Danny.
And America,
stop listening now.
Are you
the clam chowder again, isn't it?
Chowder.
It's beautiful.
Chowder.
It's chowder.
Chowder.